Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, June 16th, 2017 edition of the News Gazette, and we will begin on the front page with a piece from the Champaign Christian Science Society called Opportunity to Grow: Congregants Have Mixed Emotions About MOVE, by Jeff D'Alessio, Champaign. Some year here soon, you're likely to see Champaign Central High School softball games or marching band practice on new grass fields in the 600 block of West Church Street. But 65 years ago, it's where Jeff Wandell went to Sunday school, in the sparkling New England colonial-style Christian Science Church, then the talk of the neighborhood. I remember we had a marble drinking fountain and the red velvet seats, the Prairie Gardens owner recalled Thursday. As a kid, those were a big deal. Wandell and the rest of the Champaign Christian Science Society will gather at 602 West Church Street one last time on Sunday morning for a 10 o'clock service that will be followed by an informal organ concert at 11:30 a.m. Then it's off to their new home at 109 South Duncan Road. Will it be hard to say goodbye? Of course, congregants say. But their religion is clear on one thing. A building does not a church make. The founder of Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy, defined it as the structure of truth and love, said Carolyn Pribble, chairwoman of the church's board of directors and a regular since age 16. That's kind of the way we're looking at this. While we appreciate the beautiful building and all the people before us, we're not attached to the building. We're attached to the structure of truth and love. While plans haven't been finalized for how their space will be used, it's due to become the property of Unit 4 Schools sometime next month. The building, which in 1952 cost $165,000 to construct, will be converted into part of the new $87.1 million Central High School campus, along with neighboring spaces the district holds options on. There will be more than memories left behind. The church's beloved Wicks pipe organ won't make the trip across town, but the hope is to leave the parts in the hands of someone who will see that it finds its way to another church someday. Renowned pipe organ builder John Paul Buzzard isn't interested, given that his Champaign warehouse already has several orphaned organs. And before any construction happens at the site, plans call for the local Preservation and Conservation Association to have first dibs on any of the other unique features that aren't mobile. Personally, said Tom Garza, PACA's executive director, I was struck by how unified the building remains, by which I mean the way that it retains so much of the original intent of the design. Over time, people tend to make changes, to modernize things and make them more convenient, or to conform to changes that weren't anticipated by the original builders. But in this building, more than many I've been in, the changes were all, or mostly, very sensitive to the original feel of the place, giving it a sort of unified personality and atmosphere that one seldom finds in buildings over a couple of decades old. Garza isn't wild about the idea of what's to become of the neighborhood surrounding Central, which he calls a complete scorched earth transformation of this dense urban mixed-use neighborhood into something you'd more generally expect to find out in the suburbs. But he knows it's only a matter of time before 10 properties in the building's at-risk section of PACA's website, including the Burnham Mansion, the former McKinley YMCA, and the Christian Science Church, join Burnham Hospital, the Levi Wood House, and others on the Buildings Lost page. Wandell prefers to look at the move another way, the Christian Science way. Each one of us needs to grow, he said. When you move into a new house, you grow. When you move to a new town, you grow. When a kid moves out of the house, you grow. We have a new opportunity to grow as a church, and a church isn't what the interior looks like. What's important is the spirituality it teaches. And the next piece is from local law enforcement called Training for the Worst to Happen, Emergency Exercises Held at St. Thomas More by Marcus Jackson, Champaign. The hope is that law enforcement officials in Champaign County rarely, if ever, have to respond to situations involving an active shooter or hostage takers. But in the event of such circumstances, thanks to Thursday morning's training exercise that included members of various police and emergency agencies, they're confident they'll be up to the task of keeping the community safe. Dozens of police, firefighters, EMTs, and SWAT members made their way Thursday to the intersection of Olympian and Legacy Drives near the campus of the High School of St. Thomas More to participate in a handful of emergency scenarios, one of which included two people being held by two armed assailants in the concession stand at the St. Thomas More football field. At one point, one of the suspects came out with a rifle and was engaged by the officers. Champaign Police Lieutenant Mark Vogelzang said the second suspect was also shot and killed as well when they had an option to do that. They weren't actually shot and killed. Shortly before the training commenced, officers went through a safety check to be sure they weren't using any live ammunition. The officers and emergency personnel were to go through up to five scenarios throughout the day as a means of keeping fresh on how to handle the different situations. They weren't briefed ahead of time on what the scenarios would entail. They just reacted as if they were real, listening to instructions over radio from a command center. "We try to keep this as consistent as a real event as possible," Vogelzang said. The officers and emergency personnel represented the Champaign County Sheriff's Office, Champaign Fire Department, Champaign Police, and the department's SWAT unit, Illinois State Police, Metro SWAT, Rantoul Police, UI Police, and Urbana Police. Those units get together once per year to perform these exercises, which take about 6 months to plan. Logistically, you've got to find a place where you can do it. You want to make sure to invite all your jurisdictional disciplinary partners, said UI Police Lieutenant Todd Short, who helped organize the training along with Urbana Sergeant Jason Norton. "Heaven forbid if something like this happened in our community. We're all on a first-name basis. We know we're going to work together. We know how we're going to put command from multiple jurisdictions and multiple disciplines together to make sure that a unified operational plan is put out there to mitigate whatever it is we're dealing with." In creating the different scenarios, the officers would find themselves in on Thursday, Short said. Short said events that have taken place around the world in recent months are incorporated to give as much of a real feel to the officers as possible. "We pay close attention to those incidents. We look at those reports. We look at after-action reports. And from that information, we glean enough content to be able to create multiple evolutions of worst-case scenarios," he said. "It seems like there's not a 2-week period that goes by where we're not hearing on the news about something unfortunate happening." During the scenarios, officers dressed in camouflage fatigues were stationed at strategic locations, and they entered and exited the scene as directed by the officers calling the shots from the command center. "It's chaos. We log everything, brainstorm options. As all this information's coming in, it's a fluid event, and it's all about trying to anticipate what's going to happen," Vogelzang said. "Usually there's a lot of different things that could potentially happen, and you're trying to get solutions to all those ahead of time and have those plans in place. When that one thing does happen, you're ready for it." In the past, the exercises have taken place at various locations around Champaign County, including once at Marketplace Mall. St. Thomas More was chosen because of the potential for an emergency situation to take place at a school, and with it being summer, there were few conflicts about reserving the space for an extended period of time. "We try to move it around to different venues," Vogelzang said. "This type of training is extremely important. You're always learning things that can be done differently, things that can be done better. It's very, very eye-opening." And we'll turn now to the opinions page and begin with an editorial called "Getting Out of Pension Woods." Pennsylvania, unlike Illinois, takes positive steps in dealing with its woefully underfunded state employees' pensions. The state of Pennsylvania, like the state of Illinois, is facing severe financial problems related to its public pension system. Pennsylvania, like Illinois, has been reluctant to make the difficult decisions that are required to deal with the problem. But this week, Pennsylvania, unlike Illinois, took a meaningful first step in trying to bring its pensions conflagration under control. Democratic Governor Tom Wolf signed bipartisan legislation passed by a Republican-controlled legislature. It includes raising the retirement age for new employees from 65 to 67 and establishes a hybrid pension program, part defined contribution like a 401k and part defined benefit plan, that is designed to slow the increase in pension spending that threatened to crush state and local government there. The Philadelphia Inquirer called the legislation both sweeping but only a start, a good start, on addressing a problem that is overwhelming taxpayers in Pennsylvania, just like it is overwhelming taxpayers in Illinois. The plan is expected to save the state $2 billion to $9 billion over 30 years. It moves the state toward a fully funded pension system. Decreasing that debt would stop the state's pension obligations from crowding out other important commitments, like providing social services and fixing roads, the Inquirer editorial said. But there are limits to what the new legislation will achieve, as Governor Wolf noted when he signed the bill in law. "Let's be clear. This plan addresses our liability in the only real and responsible way possible, by changing the structure of pension benefits. The fact is, we cannot accelerate the shrinking of our liability on the backs of our current employees," the governor said. It's good for Pennsylvania that legislators who previously had refused to act in the face of a growing problem finally decided to meet their duties and face up to the situation. Perhaps they finally figured out that problems ignored do not go away. They only get worse. Pennsylvania's action also sets a good example for Illinois, where our legislators have tried and failed for a variety of reasons to stand up to this problem. But even now, pension legislation passed by the Democratic-controlled Illinois Senate remains trapped in the House Rules Committee at the direction of Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan. The speaker was eager to pass pension legislation when former Democratic Governor Pat Quinn held office. Now that a Republican is living in the governor's mansion, Madigan has lost interest in the subject. That's too bad, because pension woes pose a serious threat to the public, both in Pennsylvania and Illinois. As in the case on a variety of financial fronts, Illinois' budget woes are much worse. The land of Lincoln faces a current public pension underfunding deficit of a staggering $130 billion, a number that grows every day. Pennsylvania's underfunding deficit also is monstrous, at an estimated $60 billion to $70 billion. Hardly a mere trifle compared with Illinois, but still significantly less. It's remarkable just how similar the reasons are for the public pension woes in both states. Pennsylvania's pension debt is made worse by past governors and lawmakers approving a massive benefits expansion in 2001 and putting off payments for years, one news report states. Isn't it remarkable how legislators in Pennsylvania, Illinois, and no doubt elsewhere across the country, either can't or refuse to acknowledge the consequences of the financial decisions they make? They authorize taking much more out of the pension system while deciding to put less and less of what is required in. Yet they are shocked by the problems that directly result from their decisions. All of what both states are experiencing was easily foreseeable, particularly the horrific consequences of skipping mandated contributions to their public pension systems. Nothing could be more poisonous in terms of pension management, and it requires strong medicine to address. Pennsylvania legislators are finally waking up. Illinois keeps hitting the snooze button. And we'll turn now to the history section. And in area history, in 1917, Champaign County was 63 recruits behind its quota for the regular army for the months of April, May, and June. The quota was 104 men, and only 41 had been enlisted. In 1967, Paul Muser, 80-year-old caretaker at Maplewood Cemetery in Rantoul, was beaten, robbed, and locked in a cemetery shed. He wasn't found until the next morning. The two men also stole his car. In 2002, site work had begun on the new Stone Creek Commons office park in southeast Urbana, with construction of the first building to begin in July. And in international history, today's highlight, on June 16, 1967, the three-day Monterey International Pop Music Festival, a major event of the Summer of Love, opened in Northern California. Among the featured acts were Jefferson Airplane, The Who, The Grateful Dead, The Jimi Hendrix Experience, Janis Joplin, Otis Redding, and Ravi Shankar. On this date in 1567, Mary, Queen of Scots, was imprisoned in Lochleven Castle in Scotland. She escaped almost a year later, but ended up imprisoned again. In 1858, accepting the Illinois Republican Party's nomination for the U.S. Senate, Abraham Lincoln said the slavery issue had to be resolved, declaring, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." In 1903, Ford Motor Company was incorporated. In 2015, real estate mogul Donald Trump launched his successful campaign for U.S. president with a speech at Trump Tower in Manhattan. And now on the sports pages from Illinois basketball, guys love to play for him. As the first week of summer workouts comes to an end, college basketball beat writer Scott Ritchie reached out to former Illinois guard turned Fighting Illini Sports Network radio analyst Doug Altenberger for his take on new coach Brad Underwood and the Illini. What's been your impression of Brad Underwood? I met him up in Chicago and really enjoyed meeting Brad and meeting his family and children. They're a terrific family. He just seems to be a good fit at Illinois. I think he understands the challenges as well as the potential. He's a tough guy, but guys love to play for him. To me, he's highly respected within the coaching profession, and I'm really excited to have him on board. Which player might be set for a breakthrough in his system this winter? I have a feeling that Michael Finke can play that high post spot at the free throw line extended. Underwood likes to run the offense through that spot and reverse the basketball, and you've got a guy that can pass and shoot. I think Michael could be a surprise. He's got length, he can pass, he showed he can play a little bit more physical, and he can shoot the rock. What challenges does the 2017-18 team face? The problem is going to be the bodies. He's got a team that's, in a sense, from top to bottom, big men to guards, is out of whack. He's got to get guys, especially the bigs, that can play physical, Big Ten style basketball. We don't have that right now. I think that's the biggest challenge he's going to have. How important is locking down players like Mark Smith from Edwardsville? It's big. The reason I tell you it's big is because Coach Lou Henson struggled a little bit with recruiting until he got 1982 Mr. Basketball Bruce Douglas and Ephraim Winters, five-star McDonald's All-American players. It's a game changer, and it helps you. It gets people excited. I was excited when they signed Bruce. It was one of the reasons I came to Illinois, because I wanted to play with the great players. Hats off to Brad. He went in there and did a good job of selling what his version of Illinois basketball was. And in the local pages from the Rantoul Village Board, City hires one of its own as police chief, by Dave Hinton, Rantoul. For the first time since the late 1990s, a resident of Rantoul will be its chief of police. Native Tony Brown accepted the village's offer Thursday, becoming the first local resident to hold the position since Alan Jones Sr., 1986-99. The Rantoul Village Board will hold a special meeting next week to make it official. Brown, a deputy chief with the University of Illinois Police, was one of the two finalists for the job. However, Daniel Dempsey, a retired police lieutenant from Riverdale, pulled his name out of consideration Monday, the day before he and Brown were to meet with village officials and the public. The village board met in executive session at the end of Tuesday night's monthly board meeting. Then officials met with Brown on Thursday to extend the offer. "I'm thrilled with the opportunity," Brown said. "I really think Rantoul is headed in the right direction, and I'm quite honored to be part of that in this role." Brown will be paid $115,000 a year, village administrator Jeff Feigenshue said. The previous chief, Ehrman Blevins, was offered $110,000. He had less experience than Brown. If Blevins had stayed on board, he would have been almost at $115,000, Feigenshue said. Blevins resigned as chief in January without citing a reason. He had been in the position less than a year. Brown, who has been employed by UI Police since 1989, holds a master's degree in organizational development and change from the university. His father, Joe, was a three-term sheriff of Champaign County and served one term as mayor of Rantoul. Feigenshue and Brown will likely start in the new job in early August. "We left that timeline flexible because of his ability to complete what he's doing at the university," Feigenshue said. "We're excited to have him on." The administrator said the reaction among those attending a public reception for Brown this week was positive, with only one person making a negative comment, that the village should have involved citizens more in the selection process. Feigenshue said the village also spoke with area chiefs of police about Brown, and they expressed overwhelming support for Tony and the job he would do for Rantoul. And the next piece is from the Rantoul Police, "Kids in Stolen Car Okay, Suspect Arrested," by Tim Mitchell, Rantoul. A Rantoul man is scheduled to appear in court today following his arrest for stealing a car that had three small children in it. It was his second arrest for motor vehicle theft this week. According to a Rantoul police report, officers were called to J.W. Ader Junior High School at 10:09 a.m. Thursday to respond to a report of a vehicle theft. Witnesses said that three children, ages 9 months, 5, and 9, were in the vehicle when it was stolen. Following a search by Rantoul police, an officer found the children near Veterans Parkway and Chanute Street. The children were visibly shaken but physically unharmed during the incident, Sergeant Justin Bowes said. It was later learned the suspect had dropped the children off near the Rantoul Youth Center and told them to call police. The children, however, began walking back toward the area in which they came. Meanwhile, a Rantoul police investigator began checking rural areas of Champaign and Vermilion counties and spotted the vehicle in western Vermilion County, heading south on the Potomac-Collison Road. The investigator followed the vehicle to Oakwood, where Vermilion County Sheriff's deputies were waiting. As soon as the car entered Oakwood, they pulled it over near the intersection of Oakwood and Finley Streets. The driver was identified as Kevin Lefevre, 18, who listed an address in the 200 block of Winding Lane in Rantoul. Lefevre said he stole the vehicle without knowing there were children inside it. When he realized the children were there, he dropped them off at the Rantoul Youth Center and said he intended to drive the car to Fort Wayne, Indiana. Police arrested Lefevre for motor vehicle theft and child endangerment. This was the second time Lefevre was arrested for motor vehicle theft in Rantoul. At 12:30 a.m. Monday, police were called to the Linden Banquet Center in Rantoul after receiving a report of a stolen vehicle. Police used OnStar to track the Chevrolet SUV headed away from Rantoul near the Champaign-Vermilion County line. Rantoul and Gifford police headed that way and stopped the car about 7 miles from Penfield in Vermilion County. The driver, identified as Lefevre, said he found the SUV unlocked with keys inside. He initially planned to take it to a probation appointment in Urbana, but since he was going to be late for the appointment, he decided to take the SUV for a joyride. Lefevre was charged on Tuesday with felony receiving, possessing, or selling a stolen vehicle. He is due back in court on that case on July 18th. And in an area update from Rantoul, Rantoul Board supports housing incentive plan. There aren't many new houses going up in Rantoul these days. The village is trying to change that. The village board voted 5-1 in favor of what it hopes will be the joint adoption of a housing incentive program with the Rantoul Township High School and Rantoul City Schools districts, designed to spur construction of more new housing in the community. The school boards will still have to have their meetings, Village Economic Development Director Rebecca Motley said. If the schools vote not to do it, we don't have to proceed with it. Under terms of the program, for any new construction of a residential structure or any improvement to an existing residential structure costing more than 25% of the equalized assessed value of the structure, the village will abate or rebate the increased property taxes for 5 consecutive years. 100% of the rebate will go to the property owner the first 3 years. After that, it will decrease to 66% in year 4 and 33% in year 5. The program would affect single-family and multifamily residential units. And that was written by Dave Hinton of the Rantoul Press. We'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Friday, June 16th, 2017 edition of the News Gazette. Please stay tuned.